The topic today is something that I, how should I say this? I feel strongly about it, and I feel that I'm strongly, I feel that I'm very much failing in it. And maybe that's too honest to share, but I like to try to be honest. And it's something that I think plagues all of us in different ways. Again, I happen to personally feel that I'm struggling with this, and I titled this year, The Gift of Being Present. The challenge of just being where you are. And being able to be focused, being able to be present, being able to not multitask, because it's not always advantageous to multitask, and to allow yourself to just enjoy a moment that you're in, or to allow yourself to absorb a difficult moment that you're in. Sometimes we experience very lofty moments, and it's so lofty that we're not really there. Sometimes we experience a more simple moment, and because it's so simple, we're also not really there. So I want to try to talk together. Again, I'll do most of the talking, but it's a conversation of sorts in the sense that I'm trying to seek advice on it as much as I'm trying to share advice on it. And it's something that I think, again, many of us can relate to in the busy lives that we live. I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago for Shabbos, and it was unbelievable in the airport. Like, it hit home in such a real way. You know, we're so connected to technology, to our phones all the time. But I saw that in the airport they had installed, in the restaurant, in one of the first restaurants that I saw in the airport, they had installed iPads by every single seat in the restaurant. So I thought that was just like the first bar, the first restaurant had done that. Then I continued to walk through the airport and I noticed that like they had taken over the entire airport. There was nowhere to sit without an iPad in front of your face. There was nowhere to sit. So it was amazing. I was walking by that first restaurant. I see two people, a man and a woman, sitting at a table together, each one with a big iPad in front of them, and each one separately texting on their phones. And I'm thinking to myself, Rabbono Shel Olam, we're so connected and we're so disconnected at the same time. We're missing out on so much of life because we're so busy and we're so absorbed with all this, whatever, whether it's technology or other things, just the busyness of life. We lose out on so much. And it's a painful reality that I think plagues our world now more than probably ever in the history of the world. So I want to begin with a vart that I really love from the Majitzer Rebbe. Moshe Rabbeinu gets the call from the Rabbono Shel Olam. Right, in Parshas Mishpatim, Moshe Rabbeinu is again being called by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to ascend the mountain. Again, I don't want to get into the different shitas and Rishonim, organizing the psukim, before, after. But Moshe Rabbeinu gets the call. Now, I didn't do this on purpose, but the first source is actually not correct. I was so busy preparing the shir that I actually put the wrong pasuk on the source sheet. It would have been good shtick if I did it on purpose, but I didn't even do it on purpose, which I guess highlights the musr that I myself could use. Okay, but the pasuk that you have in front of you says that Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe's going to come up, and Aaron and the others of Canaan are going to come along, and each one's going to take their place, properly take their place at the mountain. That's pasuk Aleph and Beis. In Perek of Dalet, pasuk Yud Beis, which was the pasuk I wanted to put on, the pasuk says after Moshe performs a whole very strange scene with the blood, sprinkling the blood on the Mizbeach, on the people, kind of very cryptic scene in the Torah. Pasuk Yud Beis, again, I wrote it down, you don't have it in front of you. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, and here are the key words, Alei, Alei Elai Hahara, Vehayesham. The Majitzer Rebbe quotes it for you in source number 2. Alei Elai Hahara, Vehayesham. Come up the mountain, Vehayesham, how would you translate Vehayesham? And be there. Shkayach Rabbono Shel Olam. If I come up the mountain, then I'm there. What does that mean, Alei Elai Hahara? Come up the mountain and be there. If you're up the mountain, then you're there. So the Majitzer Rebbe says, not necessarily. You could be sitting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you're not really there. You could be having the greatest revelation that anyone ever had or will have. Lo kam b'Yisrael kemoshe. You could be connecting to Hashem, an opportunity to be in the presence of the Divine like no one has ever experienced. But you could be busy with other things and miss it. Says the Majitzer Rebbe, Hikshe Adoni Avi Zakeni Zatzal, he quotes from his grandfather, Omro Vehayesham Kimyutar. The words Vehayesham, and be there, if you're up the mountain, then you're there. It seems mutar, it seems extra. Va'amr Kagon Lamashal, he said, for example, Mishahu Eitzel Rabo Imrosho Machshavaso Babeso, Harehu Ki'ilu Eno Sham Klal Eitzel Rabo. If a person is sitting with his or her teacher, one's mentor, a person who can relay something of great substance to you, but you're thinking about the next place you need to be. If a person's by the Rebbe, he says, and his mind is at home, then he's not really by the Rebbe. It's actually, there was a little story that's told in the Sefer that goes with it. Someone came to the Majestic Rebbe's grandfather for a Shabbos. The practice was that when you would leave after Shabbos, you would go to the Rebbe and you'd say, Rebbe, you know, I want to get a bracha and say goodbye. You wouldn't leave town without checking out with the Rebbe. This individual knew he had to be by a big market. He had to travel to some big, he was somewhat on business, visiting the Rebbe for Shabbos, on his way on business on Sunday. He knew he had to leave immediately after Shabbos. He didn't want to get caught on a long line waiting to say goodbye to the Rebbe. So when he showed up on Friday, he went to the Rebbe and said, Rebbe, I want to say goodbye now on Friday because I'm planning on leaving right after Shabbos. So the Rebbe asked him this pasuk. The pasuk says, Alei alei ahari v'heyesha. Why does the pasuk say v'heyesha? And the Rebbe told him, Hashem is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, if you're not going to make a conscious effort to be here, then you're not even going to really be here, even if you're physically standing here. So the Rebbe said to this fellow, you might as well go now. Because if you're already planning on Erev Shabbos, what you're going to be doing on Motzei Shabbos, then you're not really with me for Shabbos anyway. So what's the point of not spending Shabbos with your family? You might as well go home and spend Shabbos with your family and travel on business on Sunday. Says the Majid to Rebbe, Zeh Sha'omer Alei Alei Ha'are V'Heyesham Daika. This is exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, I want you to be able to absorb the experience. It's such a unique and special experience. Be present, v'heyesham, be a part of it. V'hainu k'noda mikisvei ha-Baal Shem Tov, he writes in the last line of source number 2, as is well known, a teaching from the Baal Shem Tov, the Rishon Baal Shem Tov explained, makom sh'amachshava shel adam magas, sham hu kulo. The place where your mind is, that's where you really are. We don't judge a person based on where they're physically standing. Where do I see myself? What am I attaching my mind to? What am I connecting my soul to? That's where I am. So I could be in a theoretically very spiritual environment, but it's totally, totally going over my head. Because I'm not present. I'm not really there. I need to find a way to reel it in, to allow myself to absorb that experience. Again, like I said, sometimes we miss out on it because we're overwhelmed. And we're overwhelmed with something very good. I remember a feeling after my wedding that I was so happy. I remember saying to my wife, I was so happy that I felt like I was present. Because sometimes you hear people say, you know, on your wedding day, it's such an excitement, there's such a tumult, right? That the whole wedding day passes by, and before you know it, it's over, and you're like, wow, I feel like I didn't absorb it enough. And sometimes you hear from a chassan or a kala that they're able to say, you know what, I felt like I really was present. I know exactly who I danced with, I know exactly who I saw at the wedding, right? I wasn't overwhelmed by the greatness of it. So again, there's a danger, there's a reality that sometimes we have great experiences. Again, a joyous experience, a very, potentially very meaningful experience. You have the opportunity to meet someone who you're very inspired to meet. And it's hard to bring it in. It's hard to reel in that feeling. That's what Hashem's saying to Moshe Rabbeinu. I know you could stand there, Moshe Rabbeinu, as you're being mekabel the Torah, and you could just be so overwhelmed by the opportunity that you miss out on the subtleties and the details of the experience. And therefore, Moshe, v'heyesham, be present. That's one type of not being present that Hashem was concerned about. But there's another type of not being present that I think plagues us also very often in our life. And in a certain way, this is sometimes even harder. Because at least if I'm standing in the presence of greatness, if there's an opportunity that's really great in front of me, and I miss out on it, it's not because I missed out on it because I wasn't paying attention. I missed out on it because I was just so overwhelmed. I was absorbing it in a different kind of way. But what happens when a person has an opportunity, and it's such a simple and basic opportunity, right, that I feel like I don't have to give it my full attention? And sometimes, tragically, it's with the people I care about the most. It's with my spouse, it's with my friend, right? It's with a student, it's with a child. When a parent sits down, when I'm putting my daughter to sleep at night and we sit down to read a book together, right? We sit down to read a book and a parent decides I'm going to, so to speak, lower myself into that child's world to be present, to immerse myself in Curious George with my child. Yeah, to be present. Now I know I could probably read the book while I'm checking emails at the same time. And it might be that the person who I need to get back to, in the grand scheme of things, maybe it's more important that I get back to that person, right? Or maybe I'm able to help my friend by just giving my friend, you know, half my attention and be able to do other things at the same time. And on a practical level, I'm able to help them to get whatever they need, right? But I'm missing out. I'm missing out on the experience, the true connection that can be formed by trying to see that experience through the other person's eyes, by being really connected to that person. And I think that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it, that when we do connect, in a certain sense, we're doing one of the most holy things possible. We're in fact walking in the footsteps of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do I mean by that? The Gemara in Sota tells us, in source number 3, that a Jew has to try to walk behind God, to walk in the ways of Hashem. Amar Rami Bar Chama, Rabbi Chanina, Mai Dechsiv Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Teilechu. Walk behind God. Trail behind God. So what does it mean to trail behind God? How do you trail behind God? V'chi efshar lo la'adam la'alech achar ha'shechina. Is it possible for a person to trail behind the Shechina? After all, the Pasuk says, ki Hashem lokecha esh ochlahu. God is a consuming fire. You can't get too close to God. Hashem is not physical. What does it mean to walk behind Hashem? Says the Gemara where it's bolded, rather, Ella, it means to walk achar midos of Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to try to walk in the ways of God. To try to walk in the ways of God, to have the midos of Hashem. Just as Hashem is Malbish Arumim, so too you should be Malbish Arumim. Just as Hashem performs Bikur Cholim, you should also visit the sick. Just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs Nichum Aveilim, Hashem visits those who are mourning their loss, so too you should visit those who are mourning their loss. And just as Hashem buries the dead, as it says, Hashem took care of Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of his life, Af Ata Kover Mesim, so too you should involve yourself in burying the dead. Try to be like Hashem. That's a fulfillment of Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Teilechu. A similar Gemara, a parallel Gemara. There are differences. The Svarim talk about the differences, but these two Gemaras very often go together. The Gemara in Shabbos, Kof Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, in source number 4. Zeke Livan Veyu, this is my God and I will beautify Him. How do you beautify Hashem? So, opinion number 1, have nice mitzvos. Have a nice lulav, a nice sukkah, a nice shofar, a nice sefer Torah. Hire a scribe who was able to write the Torah so beautifully, and have a beautiful dedication to the Sefer Torah. Someone will sponsor the mantle, and someone will sponsor the crown of the Torah, and make it beautiful. Make it beautiful. Zek Keli Vanveyu, beautify Hashem by beautifying His mitzvahs. Says Abba Shaul, the last line in source number 4, Abba Shaul Omer Zek Keli Ve'anveyu, Ve'anveyu have a domelo, be like Him. Be like Him. How am I going to be like Hashem? Mahu chanun v'rachum, afata haye chanun v'rachum. Just like Hashem is merciful, Hashem is kind, so too you should try to be like Hashem. So let's ask ourselves, what was the first thing that Hashem ever did? Really sort of the foundation of Hashem. Hashem wants to build the world. David Melech says, Olam chesed yibaneh. Hashem is very kind, Hashem is very generous. But I want to think together about how Hashem created the world. And what that could tell us, what that could teach us about being present, about being mindful, and being focused. And being willing to lower ourselves to connect with someone in a real way. Even if the person, yes, I could get the job done if I'm half focused, if I'm half present. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to teach us that there's a big difference between a person who's fully present and a person who's not fully present. Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Look how Hashem created the world. It's an amazing thing. How did Hashem create the world? Because by definition, every time HaKadosh Baruch Hu is begging us to interact with Him, Hashem is lowering Himself down so that He can have an interaction with us. Hashem is way above us. Hashem is much greater than us. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in allowing us to interact with Him, lowers Himself the same way that parent is sitting there reading that kid's book with that child, right? And the parent could say, well, you know, I don't have to really come down into the child's world in order to connect fully. I don't really have to, you know, be fully focused on my friend's telling me her difficulty or situation, because I know what the answer is already, and like I've heard this a million times from her, so why do I need to look her in the eyes and hear it again? I know the solution already. So like I'll do something else while she's, you know, pouring out her heart to me. But look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, created His world. It's a little bit of a cryptic source. I'm not so inclined to share such Kabbalistic sources, because I don't learn Kabbalah. But in the Sefer Eitz Chaim, in the writings of the Arizal, it tells us a little bit of a description how Hashem created the world. And again, as much as it's very deep and complex, it's also very simple. Da, says the Eitz Chaim in source number 5, Ki terem shenetzlu hanetzolim v'nivro hanivroim, hayaur elyon pashut mamale kol hametzias. before HaKadosh Baruch Hu made anything, before Hashem made room for anything, before there was anything else, we have to try to understand, and again, it's not literal, nothing of Hashem's description is literal, but to imagine, if we could, HaKadosh Baruch Hu as what? As a light, a simplistic and wholesome light that filled all of reality. There was nothing but Hashem. Einon Movado. Only God existed. And there was no space. There was no space for anyone or for anything else. There was only Hashem. The whole world was filled nothing with, only with, not, right, everything, only to, only with Hashem's light, the Or Ein Sof Pashutu, a light that is both endless and nothingness at the same time. An Or Ein Sof, an endless light that filled all of reality. Again, Hashem's not a light, Hashem's not a beam of light, Hashem's not the sun, okay, we don't believe in that, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu filled all of reality with His endless light. Okay. V'lo hayabo, in the third line, b'chinas rosh, v'lo b'chinas sof. There was no time, there was no space, there was no beginning, there was no end. Ela kol haya or echad pashut, shava b'hashva achas. It was just one perfected existence of God. V'hu nikra or ein sof, and this is what we call, because we don't have words to describe God, we call it what? An or ein sof, an endless light. So when Hashem finally decided, and again, why Hashem decided and when He decided is totally beyond us. We can't ask the why. But Hashem at one point decides, you know what? I want to make room, so to speak, for a world. And a world, by a world, I don't just mean planet Earth. And I don't just mean our galaxy. I mean all the worlds, physical ones, spiritual ones. The fact that there could be anything besides Him came about in this moment that's about to be described. Lahotzi laor shleimus pu'ulosa v'shemosa v'kinuyav. Hashem wanted to express Himself. Hashem wanted to reveal His actions so that we can learn from them and we can try to be like Him. Hashem wanted to express His many names and nicknames. Again, various permutations of Himself, so to speak. Different midos that He wants us to be able to learn. Again, Hashem doesn't have different midos. Hashem is echad. But again, for us to understand, to see it from our perspective, as being made up of many different wondrous expressions. Asher zos haya siba briyas ha'olamos. That, after all, is why God wanted to create a world. So He continues where it's bolded. V'hinei, oz tzimtzim es atzmo ein sof b'nekuda emtzos, asher bo be'emsa oro mamish. V'tzimtzim ha'or ha'hu b'nesurache kel tzdodei svivos ha'nekuda emtzos, v'oz nishar makom panoi v'avir v'chalal reikani b'nekuda emtzos mamish. So what did Hashem do? I think a good way to picture it, the same way that we have a picture, sort of what the Torah describes, Vayipach ba'pav nishmas chayim, the way that Hashem blew a spirit of life into Adam HaRishon, into Chava, Hashem gave life to mankind. So when a person takes a breath, if I want to blow, the way that some Sefer Kabbalah say, man de nafach mitochi nafach, one who blows out, blows from within. So when a person takes a breath, first you breathe in, you gather in, and then you push out. That's how Hashem created the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzamtzem. Hashem, so to speak, gathered in that light, that endless light. He somehow pulled it into to some central point, to some nekuda emtzait, some middle point, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, peeled it back, right, let it out, creating, so to speak, this hole, this gaping hole in the middle. And that's where everything is. That's where we are. Surrounded by His light. It goes on in the writings of the Eitz Chaim, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a light beam into that hole, so we're infused with His light, we're surrounded by His light, but at least there's enough of a perception of a space, of a void, that allows us to exist. And it's within that space that everything that we know exists, and plenty of things that we don't know exists. That's how Hashem created the world. Again, in one word, Tzimtzum. Hashem contracted Himself. Hashem made Himself small. Hashem was much bigger, Hashem was much more all-encompassing, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to what? In a certain sense, limit Himself to make room for us. That's how Hashem created the world. And therefore, when we interact with others in the world, when we want to fulfill these two Ma'amari Chazal, Sota Yudal Ramad Aleph, Shabbos Kuf Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, Zek Keli Va'anveyu, Haveidom Malo, to be like Him, Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Te'ilechu, to walk in His ways, to have the midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to be mitzamtzim ourselves. That means I can't always be multitasking, because that's the opposite of tzimtzum. And that means I can't always, you know, speak to people from a position where I'm above them. I sometimes have to lower myself. I have to make myself smaller. The way a teacher who knows much more than the student is able to what? Is able to bring his or her teaching down so that the student is able to absorb something. But to do it in a way that I'm truly present, that I'm able to interact. That's how Hashem created the world. And again, that's part of the challenge of our world today, where we want to be all over the place, and we feel that we need to be all over the place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says tzimtzum, bring things down, contract things, pull it in, and then they'll be able to be space for others. Then they'll be able to be real connection with others, as opposed to trying to, you know, engage in too many things at once, and to try to be too big, and then not to be able to really experience life for everything that it can be. So again, these are two ways that a person sometimes, again, misses out on the experience. Sometimes, again, we're enthralled by something so great that we're not able to absorb it. And sometimes we're too big. We forget that we have to be mitzamtzim ourselves, make ourselves small, contract ourselves in order to allow for life to exist in the most meaningful way, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did so in creating the world. I once saw the Divrei Chaim, Rav Chaim Sanzer, the Divrei Chaim in Parshas Vayishlach. He explained that Yaakov maintains the name Yaakov even when he becomes Yisrael. Why does Yaakov maintain the name Yaakov when he becomes Yisrael? Because as people, we have to maintain a sense of Yaakov, a certain simplicity that Yaakov embodies, even when we become Yisrael. Sometimes we just get too big for ourselves. We get too involved in too many things that we're not involved in anything, that we're not connected to anyone. I have too many friends, so I don't have any real friends. Right? I have too many responsibilities, so I'm not actually being responsible for anyone or anything. And therefore, Yisrael, which is our name of greatness, Yisrael is the name, go out and conquer the world, take charge, lead the way, bring Mashiach. Right? But Yisrael kept the name Yaakov to remind himself that sometimes you have to be mitzamtzim a little bit. Sometimes I have to just be Yaakov. If I really want to be Yisrael on the world stage, I mean, sometimes I have to just be Yaakov. I have to be able to bring it back down, so I don't lose myself in that image of Yisrael. That I'm able to just be Yaakov. And I'm able to just be that wholesome, you know, essential self, to return to the essential self. A third scenario. A third scenario of Vehayesham, of being present. Yosef is sitting in the dungeon. It's verse number 6 in Parshas Vayeshev. Vayikach Adonai Yosef Osovi Neo Beis Asawa. Yosef gets himself into a little bit of trouble with Eishes Potiphar, and he gets thrown into the dungeon. And then the Pasuk says, again, so interesting, so similar to the Pasuk in this week's Parsha, when Moshe is ascending the mountain, Vehayesham, Yosef is placed in jail, Vayehisham. And he is there. Yes, he's there. You just told me he's there. You told me Yosef was placed in the dungeon. Vayehisham, Bebeis HaSawar, and he was in the dungeon. He was in jail. If you put Yosef in jail, then presumably he's in jail. Why does the Torah need to tell us Vayehi Sham Bebeis HaSawar? And again, it's the same theme, but it's a different angle. It's very important for us to have. Because sometimes a person is in a difficult situation. And a person wants to be in a very different situation. And it might be objectively totally reasonable and understandable why you would want to change that situation. The same way that Yosef doesn't want to be in a dungeon. Yosef was accused of things he didn't do. Yosef was taken advantage of by another man's wife. So it's unfair that Yosef has to spend all this time, right, in this jail. And yet, even as I'm sure Yosef wants to get out, as anyone who's in a difficult situation would like to see that situation change, but Yosef, Vayihi Sham Bebeis HaSawar, he was present in jail. He was present in jail, even as I'm sure he was dreaming of a better life outside of jail. But he was also present in jail. Says Rav Levi Yitzchak of Arditch of the Kedushas Levi in source number 7, the top of the second side of the page. L'chora hu miyutar, again, it seems to be a little bit extra. You told me he's in jail, so then he's in jail. You don't need to announce it twice. V'nira dinei kesh kadosh baruch hu sholeach ala adam chas v'shalom davar lo tov. Says the Berditchever. Says Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev. Sometimes, again, we find ourselves in a situation that is, to our eyes, not good. Everything Hashem does is good, but that's in the grand, again, the grand scheme of things. In terms of my experience, I find myself in a situation that I don't like. And it's not good. And I want it to change. Now, I don't want to focus so much on this next line. I'm going to read it inside, but it requires explanation. We're not talking about that balance of bitachon and eshtadlus. Okay, so just warning you, look what he says. The Berditcher says, when a person finds himself or herself in a difficult situation, azai lo yase shum pu'ula gashmius rak yivtach b'Hashem. Don't do anything other than hope that Hashem will provide for you. Okay, now again, that's a big topic and there's very different approaches to it, and I'm not even sure that this is the Berditcher's approach to it entirely, where he says never do any eshtadlus and just have bitachon and everything's going to be fine. And I'm certainly not encouraging that or recommending that for people like ourselves. So I want to just be clear that I don't want to focus on that point. But let's keep going. He says, put your faith in Hashem, trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bevadai yafoch lo letova, certainly, if you trust in Hashem, it will get better. And he says, that is the midah of Nachum Ish Gamzu, the one who coined the term Gamzu letova. Gamzu letova, this is for the best, everything is good, everything's going to be fine. But let's focus again on the question that we asked. Which is, why does it say Vayihi Sham Bebeis HaSoar? And again, whether we're going to take that approach to bitachon or eshtadlus, even if we're going to be putting in eshtadlus, even if we're going to try to be changing our situation, but I think we can still learn something from Yosef's Vayihi Sham. That even as I want to have a better situation, I want to have a different situation, but I also need to be present because there's a reason I'm here right now, even though it's uncomfortable. There's a reason that Hashem put me in this situation, and it's not simply to get out of this situation. There's something I'm supposed to learn and I'm going to miss it if I'm not paying attention. V'zeu ha-remez v'yihi sham b'beis ha-sawar, where it's bolted. Afal pishaya efshar lo lasos eiza pu'ula shelo yeh b'beis ha-sawar. Again, in the language of the Berditcher, even though Yosef could have done something to change his situation, or I'll say it differently, even as we're doing something to change our situation, assuming that we're going to do some human hishtadlus, we're going to do our part to make things better, and yet at the same time, lo asa shum pu'ula. There has to be a part of ourselves, again, even if we don't take this literally, there has to be a part of ourselves that says, but I'm here. Yes, I want to be there. And God willing, I will get there. And maybe I will have some bitachon and I'll do some hishtadlus, or maybe I'll take this approach and have all bitachon that I'll get there. But at the end of the day, I'm here. And there's a reason that I'm here. And therefore, Yosef HaTzadik, vayihi sham b'beis ha-sawar, there was a certain peace of mind that Yosef had. There's a certain yeshiva das that Yosef had being there. Yes, I know there's questions. You're telling me Yosef told the Sara Mashkim to look out for him when he gets out, right? To do something about the situation. So you seem that Yosef did some eshtadlus. Yosef was punished. He spent more time in the jail. Okay, I don't want to deal with whether or not Yosef was supposed to do eshtadlus or not do eshtadlus. But the point is that on some level, as much as Yosef wanted to get out, and Yosef was confident that he will get out. Right? But he was there. He was there. Vayihi sham b'beis ha-sawar. And I think just that perspective is so important to have. Because there are times when a Kodesh Baruch Hu puts you in a difficult situation and you can't get out right away. And it's not going to be on your terms. You're not going to be able to free yourself right away. So to be able to be present and to say, okay, this is also a learning experience. I'm not going to close my eyes and wake me when this is over. I'm not going to distract myself and pretend that this is not a difficulty. I'm going to immerse myself in a healthy way in that struggle and learn from it. And I'm going to be present. So again, we've seen three different models of challenges of being present and how we can hopefully overcome them. Again, Hashem says to Moshe, listen, you're coming up the mountain, you're being mekabel the Torah. Moshe, be present. It's a lofty moment and it'll be memorable no matter how much, but try to pick up again on the details, on the nuance. Try to allow yourself to absorb that opportunity to sit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and be mekabel the Torah. Again, a second example, how sometimes we need to lower ourselves to be present. Where I feel like I don't need, it's not such a great experience, and I kind of want to just be yotzei and be done with whatever I'm going through. So I'll be able to attend the class or the shiur, and I'll also be able to text at the same time, and I'll get like the basic idea from the shiur, and that'll be good. But there's something that's going to be missing if I don't lower myself into that space. If I don't create that space the way that Hashem created that space and lowered Himself to create our world. And again, the third example. Of Yosef sitting in that dungeon, sitting in that dark cellar in that jail, and Vayihi Sham Bebeis HaSoar. Vayihi is a lashon of tsar. It was a difficulty, but he was sham. He was present. He allowed himself to be there to absorb that experience. And this is what it really means to be a Jew, who's focused on what? On one's inner world. There's an amazing little story that's told. The Lubavitcher Rebbe brings it in source number 8. He says that one time the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe of Lubavitch, was sitting with a group of people, and he was about to tear a mimer. Now, Rabbi Rashab was a genius in Torah, and when he would present, you know, one of his long ma'amarim, everyone wanted to hear, and you could be spellbound for hours and just listen and listen and listen. He had so much to share. But the practice was by Lubavitch. The practice was that before the Rebbe would begin to share the mimer, there were certain songs that they would sing in order to create a certain spiritual atmosphere and environment, a state of mind, in order to be able to prepare oneself to hear the Torah, to mekabel the Torah. So it happened one time, Lubavitch Rebbe writes in the fifth line, it happened one time in the sixth line, in source number 8, Pam achas bizvadus. One time there was this gathering, and the Rebbe Rashab was preparing to say Torah. And everyone was so excited. And they knew they had to sing these songs as, again, the prerequisite leading up to the Torah that was going to be shared. And at that moment, the Bachrim were menagnim nigun b'chipazon. They were singing the songs, but they were singing it very quickly. Almost as if to say, like, let's just get this over with so we can get to the part that we really came for. Right? Like, how can I fast forward this so I can just get to the part that interests me? Yeah? And the Rebbe Rashab stopped them. And the Rebbe Rashab said to them, go back now to the fourth line, Shepnimi, that a person who's pnimi, a person who's truly living an internal existence, a person who's not living a superficial external existence, but a person who's a pnimi, as a person, a descriptive term for a person, right? Someone who is pnimi by nature. Someone who is inward by nature. Someone who's trying to tap into something deep and internal, called davar shehu oseh, Harehu shakua bazet legamri. The thing that you're doing, you're entirely there. A person who's pnimi by nature is able to be fully there and doesn't feel that I need to run away from where I am right now to go do something else. Or the thing I'm doing right now is not significant in and of its own right, so while I'm doing this, I'll do something else. A pnimi, a person who's really pnimi, a person who understands that every experience that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us can be meaningful in its own right. A person who really understands, can see through the outer layers of anything, is able to say, this is right where I need to be right now. And I'm not going to try to do something else while I'm doing this. I'm able to be here. If right now I'm spending time with my friend and talking to my friend, then that's the only thing that matters right now. And if I'm davening mincha, then that's the only thing that matters right now. That doesn't mean that everything else doesn't matter. Of course the test that you're taking in a half hour matters. But right now, with Hashem, I'm davening mincha. That's the only thing that has to matter right now. Right now, I'm sitting with my friend or my spouse. Right now, I'm working on this. So I don't have to feel bad that I'm not working on that. A person who's pnimi by nature is able to be shakua, is able to be fully immersed in the thing that he or she is fully, hopefully fully immersed in. So they're sitting there, and they're singing in a good, and very quickly, and everybody says, whoa, what are you doing? The Torah's going to come. We'll get to the Torah. In the right time, we're gonna get to the Torah. But right now, we're singing a nigun. So let's sing it with all our heart and all our soul. Let's be involved in what I'm involved in, and not trying to do the second thing while I'm still doing the first thing. Every week, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us an opportunity to experience something, which if we study from a halachic perspective, is loftier than Yom Kippur. See, in our head, Yom Kippur is like the day, right? It comes once a year, we're very excited, we're very into it, a lot of preparation, very focused. What about Shabbos? In halacha, Shabbos is really on a higher level than Yom Kippur. We take it for granted because it comes every week. So we sometimes use Shabbos as sort of like, you know, just something to crash into and to recover and then to throw ourselves back into the things that I need to really do. But Shabbos is a huge opportunity. And to be present on Shabbos, to be able to embrace the quietness of Shabbos, not to be looking to escape Shabbos, right? Whether it's through studying or thinking about what I have to do after Shabbos, but allowing ourselves to really just be within Shabbos is a very beautiful thing. And it's a very, very lofty thing. I was thinking maybe that's why when we say the Shir Shel Yom in source number 9, right? We say Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbos, Hayom Yom Sheni B'Shabbos, Hayom Yom Shlishi B'Shabbos. We're counting the days of the week. And on Shabbos itself, we say Hayom Yom Shabbos Kodesh. Today is Shabbos. We know it's Shabbos. Moshe, you know you're standing at the top of the mountain. Yosef, you know you're sitting in a dungeon. You know you're sitting in a jail. Why is it reminding us, Hayom Yom Shabbos Kodesh, today is Shabbos. I know it's Shabbos. But if I don't remind myself that it's Shabbos Kodesh, today is Shabbos Kodesh, then another Shabbos can go by, and another Shabbos can go by, and another Shabbos can go by, and we're not absorbing the sanctity of Shabbos. Sometimes we take it for granted, we forget what it is, what it can be. I want to read you a quote, I want to read you a little piece from a book called Strangers and Neighbors. Anyone ever hear of it? Strangers and Neighbors is a little memoir, I guess you could call it, by a woman whose name is Maria Johnson. She's a professor of theology at the University of Scranton. She is not a Jewish woman, but it happens to be Scranton has a large Jewish community, and she has a lot of Jewish friends and neighbors. The name of the book is Strangers and Neighbors. The fifth chapter of this book is called Good Shabbos. Okay? Listen to what Maria Johnson says about Shabbos. My friends always told me that they love Shabbos, but quite frankly, I never believed them. Until recently, I assumed that Shabbos observance was a big nuisance. Some sort of penitential thing that Jews had to make the best of and pretend to like for the benefit of outsiders. When someone summoned me as a Shabbos guy, that's what she writes, Shabbos guy, I would do the job, chat for a couple of minutes, and then leave, assuming they would find it an irritation to have me hanging around watching them navigate all the annoying rules. My attitude changed suddenly and completely when I stopped by a Hoover's for some reason one Shabbos afternoon. An appetizing smell was coming from the kitchen. Yaakov and Simcha were doing puzzles on the floor. Yosef was bent over a Hebrew book at the table. David was trying to stand on his head. Something about the scene struck me as peculiar, but it took a minute to figure out what it was. Ahuva has 8 children, runs a catering business from home, heads fundraising for the school, for the day school, works in the mikveh every evening from her children's bedtime until her own, and sews most of the clothes for her own family and lots of other people besides. She is perpetually on the move, manhandling toddlers and shopping bags, in and out of the car with her sleeves rolled up, flour on her nose, needles stuck through her shirt, and the cell phone clipped to her belt ringing every 2 minutes. In years, I don't think I had ever seen her sit down for 3 minutes at a time, even during meals. But here she was, lying on the sofa, with the little ones lolling against her, listening to Dina read a sci-fi novel. She couldn't cook, she couldn't sew, she couldn't shop, she didn't have to answer the phone, she just had to be. She just had to be. Just had to be. I had always thought of Shabbos as a 25-hour prison of petty regulation. Suddenly I saw how my friends spoke of it with such love. But they thought of the day not as a prison, but as a queen. It's not just that Ahuva was getting a break from her hectic life, but that she was at the epicenter of a place where restfulness was absolutely palpable. Not just an absence of activity, but a real presence. But a real presence. How many of us are able to stop and realize that's what Shabbos offers us? It's not just a break, right? But to be present and to receive the present that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, pun intended, gives us every single Shabbos. And I think a big part of allowing this to happen is simply training ourselves to slow down, which is something that I'm working on. And I'm sure we're all working on it in different ways. Because again, we have a lot of demands. At every stage of life, we have a lot of demands. A lot of things that we're trying to juggle. And it's hard to slow down. It's just hard to slow down. And our world is so fast-paced today that it's even harder to slow down. Slowing down feels like you're operating at some strange speed that's not in sync with reality. But if we don't slow down, we miss out on life. We miss out on the real opportunities to connect with things that we really want to connect with. And we're going to regret later on that we didn't take the time to connect in a deep way. We just left Mitzrayim. We've been leaving Mitzrayim, all these parshios. The Mesilas Yesharim writes in the second parak that how did they become so enslaved in Mitzrayim? How did Paro do that to us? Says the Mesilas Yesharim, Paro kept us so insanely busy that we didn't have time to think. We didn't even have time to realize that we were descending from being the greatest nation on earth to being the lowest ranking people on planet earth. That we become lowly slaves to Paro Mitzrayim, that we were being abused and it didn't even bother us, didn't even register that we should raise our voices. It took Klal Yisrael so long to voice a concern to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Paro kept us so busy, says the Mesilas Yesharim, Paro kept us so busy. And Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal writes, in the Mesilas Yesharim in the second parak, that's how the Yitzhar operates in every generation. He gets us so busy to the point that we can't think, we can't make real decisions, we're living our life sort of just in passing, and then you turn around and time has gone by and a tekufa, a period of my life, which I could have absorbed so much more from, but I was so busy worrying about the next stage, right, or worrying about too many things that I didn't stop to just absorb a slice of it, to take it in a deep and meaningful way. In the Achsharas of Reichen from the Piyazetz Rebbe, he writes in source number 10, Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Mishlei, Chazisa ish otz bidvarav. If you see a person who's otz is similar to ruts, a person who's always running, a person who's always harried in his ways, tikva lichsil mimenu. There's more hope for a fool than that individual. Than the one who's rushing through life, there's more hope for a fool to have a meaningful experience than the person who thinks their life is so meaningful, but they're really just so busy with so many things. Umaran HaBaal Shem Tov Zatzal, the holy Baal Shem Tov explained the pasuk that we say every day as part of Kabbalah Olam HaShemayim in Shema. We say, V'avadetem Meheira, which of course in context means that if you don't serve Hashem properly, very quickly things will fall apart. But the Baal Shem Tov said, just read the words literally. What do the words mean? That Meheira, Mihirus, rushing, it should go li'ibud, it should be forgotten, it should be lost. Lose the pace of life that's destroying you. Slow down a little. Slow down, just be there. Be in a moment and just take it in. Enjoy it. Ravadatem Mehira, lose the speed. You don't have to be so fast. You're not getting more, you're getting a lot less. Shetzarich ha'adam la'abiras ha'mehiras. A person needs to lose the mehiras. If you're going to try to do things so quickly, you're not going to absorb it. It's going to gloss over you. V'hainu she'abideyam yusheves v'lo b'mehiras. To try to live a life, again, of quiet contemplation. And again, I know we can't do this all the time. But a little bit we can. A little bit we can. Once in a while we can actually shut off our cell phone and just sit and think. Once in a while we can just sit with someone and just talk to that person, not figuring out what comes next. And again, there are those things, they're out there, they're waiting for you. There's more responsibilities, there's other demands. But to allow ourselves to just be in that moment. And when we focus on this, when we work on this, it's such a life changer. Shabbos comes alive again, friendships come alive again. Right? Experiences, which again, which we're assumed to be nothing of great meaning or substance. All of a sudden, because I'm immersing myself in it, because I'm being a pnimi, I'm not singing the niggin to get to the Torah, but I'm singing the niggin because now I'm singing the niggin, I'm absorbing the Torah, and I'm absorbing the Torah, and I'm where I am when I'm there. It's a different life. It's a different experience. I want to end, since it's Rosh Chodesh Adar, so we're heading to Rosh Chodesh Adar this week, so I want to end on a Purim note. Because the same way that Paro tried to destroy us, like the Mesilas Yesharim said, by keeping life moving at a ridiculous pace, so too Haman tried to destroy us in a similar way. And it's very fascinating to note that the celebration of Purim is described how in the Megillah? What day do we celebrate? Do we celebrate the day that the Jews fought for their lives? No. The Pasuk says what? The Pasuk says that we celebrate the days that the Jews rested. That when the Jews came to a state of Menucha, that means if they were still fighting in Shushan on the 14th, they'll celebrate the next day when things are quiet, when things are calm. Says the Sfas Emes in the final source. Says the Sfas Emes, Mashakavu ikra yom tov b'yom ha-menoach. You would think, let's celebrate the day that was filled with energy, with passion, with salvation, where the Jews were fighting against the enemies were trying to destroy them. Lahashmid, laharug, la'abid. Man, woman, and child with such a victory, with such a valiant fight. Maybe we should celebrate that day. We celebrate the next day when things got quiet again. Why are we celebrating the quiet? The quiet that's after the storm. It says again the Sfas Emes, Mashakavu ikra hayom tov b'yom ha-menoach. That which the Megillah says, that v'yomim asher nachu ha-yehudim, the days that the Jews rested, came to a state of menucha. V'omrim shasa nisim b'zman hazeh. We say, wow, Hashem, thanks for the miracle. The miracle of what? The fight was yesterday. The miracle's not today. Today's just a regular day. Hagam de lechore ikir haya nitzachon ha-melchama. Says the Sfas Emes, shouldn't we celebrate the victory of the war? Shouldn't we acknowledge the war itself? But look what Amalek tries to do to us. Achein tachlis melchemes Amalek kimach shemam, hu levatel ha-menucha. Amalek comes at a time when Jews are finally getting their act together, and Amalek always tries to cause a bilbo hadas. Amalek causes us to lose ourselves, to become overwhelmed. Amalek confronts us and catches us off guard. Asher karcha baderech, that Amalek of course happens upon us and disturbs our peace of mind. Kamasha kosa, like the pasuk says, v'haya behaniach v'chulu timcha v'chulu. Like it says in Parshas Kisavo, Kiteitze, I'm sorry, the end of Kiteitze, v'haya behaniach, when you finally come to settle, have a certain yishuv adas, timcha zecher Amalek, destroy Amalek. Says the Sfas Emes, by being miyushav, by having yishuv adas, that's how you destroy Amalek. Amalek is the one who always comes and always tries to unsettle Klal Yisrael, to cause us to lose a sense of clarity in our life, that behirus, that clarity. That the Jews will ask, Hayesh Hashem bekirbenu amayin. That the Jews just saw miracles coming out of Mitzrayim, and finally, after years of slavery, the whole world takes a step back and says, leave the Jews alone for a little bit, let them have a little menucha, and Amalek attacks. And they start up with us again. Amalek is always coming to start up with us and to disturb our menucha. So therefore, v'haya b'haniach. If you can experience, the Medrash actually makes a very interesting link between Zachor, remember what Amalek did to you, and Zachor, Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Every Shabbos is a victory over Amalek. Every Shabbos is a victory over v'avaditem mehira, that we destroy the mehiras. The way that the world just wants faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. We slam on the brakes. And we said we're going to have a quiet moment with our family, with our friends, with our Creator, with our world, with ourselves. Nimtza she'ikar edifa samalik shelo lavo al menucha. Amalek is constantly coming to disturb us, to uproot us from that peace of mind. V'zeha os shebo el menucha hu ha'edus ha'machias kocha shel amalek. And therefore the celebration of Purim is the day of what? Is the day of rest that follows the battle. It's the fact that the Jews are able to get back to their couches with a book, and to be able to just say, "Wow, Hashem, what a gift Shabbos is! What a gift Shabbos! I know, there's a lot of things waiting for me Motzei Shabbos, but right now it's Shabbos, and I can sit here and just be with you, Hashem. I don't have to feel that rush that I feel all week. I don't feel that pressure in my life. I'm able to just to take a breath, to breathe in Shabbos, to immerse myself in Shabbos. When we're in Shabbos, we're surrounded by Shabbos. We're pnimi, we're shakua." Again, in the language of the Rebbe Rashab, that we're not rushing to the next thing, but we're enjoying the moment in which we find ourselves. The hour is late. I want to add one last point. Let's go back to Source 11 just for a second. I know we only have like 10 seconds, but let's just take a look at it for a second. Because the Gemara says that if a person takes big steps on Shabbos, it might even be Aser. You're not allowed to run on Shabbos. Halacha says if you're running to do a mitzvah, you're allowed to run. Okay, but on Shabbos, a person's supposed to have psia ketana, not psia gasa. Not supposed to take big steps on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, "Ma'u lepsoa psia gasa b'Shabbos." You're allowed to take big steps on Shabbos. Amrulo v'chi b'chol mihotra. Is it even allowed during the week? The Gemara responds, "Shani omer psia gasa no tell us echad mechamesh meos mimor einav shel adam." Taking big steps causes a person to lose 1/500th of his or her eyesight. And then the Gemara says, "Umahadir lebe kedusha debei shamsh." And when you say kiddush on Shabbos, that's a time to get your eyesight back. What does it mean? You're supposed to stare at the kiddush. You're supposed to look at the candles. Different minhagim, different practices recorded in very holy sources. Right? But what's this idea? You can't take big steps on Shabbos. And the Gemara says, "Really, you're not even supposed to take big steps during the week." And what does it mean that when you come to Shabbos, you'll get your eyesight back, and taking big steps causes you to lose your eyesight? Again, is there a metaphysical reality here? Perhaps. But I think there's also a very real Musar lesson that Chazal are trying to tell us. If you're taking big steps, you're going to lose perspective. You're going to lose your eyesight. You're not going to see the things that are right in front of your face. You're not going to see. You'll never get to see in a deep way the person who you're sitting with. You'll never be able to see the experience that you're having now because you're already thinking about what the next experience is going to be. And therefore, slow down. On Shabbos, it's Asr. During the week, it's also not even. It's Chazal are telling us it's also not even proper. You're missing out on life. So Mir Tzashem, we should be zochet to win this battle against the Malik. Again, there's a lot more Purim Torah connected to it. But the victory over Paro, emerging in these parshas from Mitzrayim, and the victory over Amalek, Rishis Goyim Amalek, the first one to start up with us, when we finally have a moment to rest, is that Amalek that's always gnawing at us, always trying to cause us to become unsettled, to allow ourselves to be there when we're experiencing great things, to allow ourselves to be there when we're experiencing small things, to allow ourselves to be there when we're experiencing difficult things, and in that way we're able to enjoy the wonderful lives that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given to each and every one of us.